Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at COTA.com/service changes. That's COTA.com/service changes.
You're about to enter into a new world of knowledge, curiosities, and high strangeness. This is a podcast of Straight Up Strange Productions.
You're listening to Mysteries and Monsters. I'm your host, Paul Bestel. On this week's show, I welcome a man with decades of investigation and research in the field of strange phenomena. Steve Mira has travelled the world, covering more cases and incidents than most of us can even imagine. We delve into some of his memorable cases, his thoughts on the Fortean world, and much, much more. But before that, of course, don't forget you can support Mysteries and Monsters by signing up at patreon.com/mysteriesandmonsters. $4 a month gets you ad-free episodes, guaranteed early releases, bonus content, and more. And you can also click the link in the show notes as usual. Thank you to each and every one of you that continue to support the show with your contributions. Mysteries and Monsters is across most social media networks. Please subscribe to the Mysteries and Monsters channel on YouTube. You can also visit our website at mysteriesandmonsters.com for episodes and news. Our exclusive merchandise site is available through TeePublic, and the link for that is in the show notes too. Our intro and outro music are performed by the marvellous Weary Pines. Thank you as always to Dean Bestel for his wonderful artwork, and the show is produced by Mr. Brennan Storr of the Ghost Story Guys. Let's take a trip to the north of England and meet the marvellous Steve Mira. With decades of investigations and Fortean research under his belt, my guest on today's episode is one of the UK's most knowledgeable researchers. With countless television and podcast appearances under his belt as well, Steve Mira has authored numerous books and articles, spoken and organised conference, as well as appearing on the most recent set of the Unsolved Mysteries episodes. Steve, I'm delighted to finally welcome you to Mysteries and Monsters.
Thanks for having me on, Paul. I'm so glad you didn't go right through all my bio. Would have been show would have been over, you know.
Well, I know that I'd like to try and fine tune it, Steve. Not that I'm not interested in these things, but man of your experience, we, like you say, we could be here an hour till I've got through.
We could, yeah. It's been 41 years now in the field, and I've done a lot, so many different things. And of course, when you start adding things into your bio, I mean, it just goes on and on and on. So try and keep them as short as sweet. I'd rather talk more about the things I do as opposed from the bio of things I've done.
Yeah. You know? Well, exactly. It's always nice to list your achievements and the organisations and things
Absolutely,
you've done.
Yeah.
But when we start getting to your college qualifications and things like that, Steve, I think we're people will lose patience with us.
Yeah, I mean, of course, I started when I was very young, and you learn as you go on, you know, and time goes by and ideas change, research changes, you grow and network around the world. You end up working with some of the biggest people in the subjects all over the world and putting on events. And then internationally lecturing all over the place and getting into television was an early thing. I actually started writing for television. Mm. And then I kind of fell in front of the camera one day and they liked it and took it from there. Done some acting and I lost count of the shows I've done over the years. There's always something in the pipeline. There's always something happening. But it's a learning curve, and you know, you can spend a lifetime in this field and still be chipping away at the block. So You know, but, you know, together with many others, the idea is to put research together and try and advance the subject. Because, you know what, it's been static, these subjects, for such a long time. Ufology, you know, the paranormal. I mean, you know, we need a breath of fresh air. We need to move on. We need to move forward. We need to come up with new ideas, new areas of research, and trying to chip away at the block as to understanding what these anomalies are.
Mm. I suppose, like you say there, Steve, with you having over 4 decades of research and investigation in this field now, has it surprised you to see where it was back in the mid-80s to where we are now? Because obviously, even for me, as someone with a lifelong interest in these subjects, and I kind of dropped out of it in my 20s due to life in general normally, Steve, even over the last 6 years of doing this show, I always thought I was a very well-read and fairly knowledgeable person. I am at a point now where I clearly am far more well-versed, I feel, and more knowledgeable in a wide variety of subjects. So for someone like you, is it surprising sometimes when you look back at what we used to think things were explained away as to where we are now?
Yeah. I mean, it's God, you know, I was such an amateur back then. But you know what? You don't think it at the time. You think you're one step ahead of the crowd when you research. But boy, have we been so wrong about so many things. I mean, of course, my mentors in ufology, most of them have passed away now, unfortunately. There are still a few alive. Who told me about, you know, well, you know, Steve, it's a nuts and bolts phenomena. The extraterrestrials, they're travelling from the vast distances of space, utilising their specialised craft with advanced technology that they have. And that's been swallowed. That narrative, I was told in the 1980s, is the narrative that's been for the last 70-odd years, certainly since the Roswell days. But as time's gone on, especially when we started getting into sort of the 2000s, that is when there was a big change in research and people started to look at things properly, the whole scope of things. Because we did have problems trying to recognise certain phenomena and looking for things that didn't even exist within the camp, to be honest with you. And that's because it didn't lie in a ufological camp. It lied in the paranormal or parapsychological research camp. But we had this compartmentalization. People wasn't talking to each other. I mean, I'm friends with everybody. And I mean, don't get me wrong, I've spent a lot of time in parapsychological research and paranormal mechanics, advanced studies over the years. But I've also spent my time in ufology and cryptid, ancient sites, all sorts of different things. And the connectivity between these varied topics were thought to be non-associated, but that's not true. And of course, once we recognize an association, we have to kind of just suddenly drop all those walls, all those boxes, the compartmentalization, and try and bring people together. Because, you know, we had UFO events, we had paranormal events, and we have Bigfoot or cryptid or crypto events. But really what we need is to have them all there, to be honest with you, because they've all got some very vital information to put forward, and they need to talk amongst themselves, because when they do that, they will recognise a lot of it, that is, they're dealing with the same type of phenomena. And it was just kind of not recognised, and it's still a bit like that. Look, we're still battling, trying to get rid of the compartmentalization. It's not necessary. It's a hindrance to concluding on investigations. But we are moving forward and the narratives are changing. It's massive difference to me. When in the paranormal, when you first get into the paranormal, you can spend years conducting what you might refer to as investigations. But usually when you join a group or a team or somebody, which was my naivety when I was very young, running around with video recorders and a tape recorder in your hand to see if you can capture an EVP. And, you know, but, you know, for me, it was like, well, okay, well, you've got two different types of cases. You've got those that you're dealing with people and people's homes.
Yeah.
And they want answers. They want help. sometimes they're traumatized. Well, we know that I was ashamed to be associated with organizations that don't even offer that.
Yeah.
It was about what they could get, what they could capture.
Mm.
But in regarding assisting or helping those people, that wasn't even on the scope, to be honest.
Yeah.
But I think it was just the fact that people wanted to talk with others, which kind of got them through the door. So the process of investigation was very, very poor. Most people were running around then when it got a little bit later in the years with infrared cameras, you know, infrared phenomena. Infrared technology is not good for doing paranormal investigation. Anyway, it's kind of opposing it, actually. So,
yep.
But it doesn't help. But, you know, you end up, it's more the entertainment side and not viable research or investigation.
Mm.
So I got bored of that very, very quickly because I wanted answers. Yeah. And unfortunately, ghost groups and ghost hunters or whatever, they're not going to give you that. You know, you're going to get maybe some experiences, but you'll get no scientific data, nothing that'll help push or advance the subject forward. We've got to get into new areas. So for me, yeah, it was a massive difference. It literally flipped completely the opposite in some cases as to what I learnt in the early days about various phenomena.
Mm. Do you think this is, we've kind of got through this nadir, like you say, where we've kind of gone through this gentleman investigation, as some of the early members of the SBR and the Ghost Club, Steve, yeah. They'd all go around for, often would seem like a dinner party and stay in these beautiful country piles all over the place,
yeah,
with their notebooks and their bags of flour and bits of string here, there and everywhere. And then we've kind of gone through throwing every technological aspect we can, even if there's no guarantee that that's even going to give us any results that we're searching for. To now, we seem to be looking at things in a more scientific basis, because I think, along with everything that's happened in the UAP field over the last 10 years, it seems that certain organisations and certain scientists in different disciplines, they're not too concerned about the stigma that used to be attached to investigating parapsychology or the UAP phenomena or even strange creatures, Steve.
That's right. You're absolutely right. I mean, you dare talk about it in old days. However, it's not the elephant in the room anymore. So, but yeah, times have changed. It's become more popular. However, you know, at one time it used to be quite hip. People used to think it was quite hip to be, you know, doing some type of research in that study of the paranormal or UFOs or whatever. The hip side of it suddenly kind of fades away very quickly. And what you're left with is abundance of data which you're trying to understand. But we're very limited with the tools that we have at hand.
Mm.
I mean, when I started, you know, what did I have? I had one of those big 80s tape recorders, a pad, a pen, a pair of binoculars, a compass, you know, because we just didn't have any goodies, the equipment that was required for scientific data. And now it's in abundance. And now you can even have things created if they actually aren't on the market.
Mm.
You know, so you can actually have these certain things built. So now is a playground of materials that we can use to obtain scientific data. So it puts us into new areas of research because we're totally exhausted trying to gain any data from simple equipment, such as a compass. Well, the compass was used in the old days in MUFON investigations in Project Blue Book, you know, for regarding magnetic fields in association to close encounters with UAP. But that was it, you know, and now we have very, very vigorous types of equipment which will give us the minute details in regarding gravitational anomalies, geomagnetic fluxes, positive magnetic regions. You know, there was just so many different things now. So we can really knuckle down and start looking scientifically at the data to try and get some answers. And we are slowly getting the answers. But the problem is that it's not the answers we expected, you know, and that's because it's not the narrative that we've been fed, you know, and the phenomena is much more than what we've ever been told or what is understood about it. And that's the same really perplexing right across the whole various subjects of the whole board. And as time has gone on, we realise that, okay, well, if it's not what we've been taught or told, then what is it? Well, there's no point trying to level out that. You've got to throw it out and replace it with new data, and that means the narrative has to change, and this is what we're starting to see. Even at Pentagon level, narratives are changing. New names are coming in, such as interdimensional. You know, I mean, in new names like that, interdimensional, would never existed because it was extraterrestrial, it was ETH. But that's been thrown out and replaced by the interdimensional hypothesis now, the IH. So it's we are moving forward, you know, but each time we get new data, there's 1,000 more questions each and every time. So it's just forever expanding, like an estuary goes into 10 and that goes into 100. You know, but it's going to take time. But at least moving in the right direction, Paul. And I think it's, in comparison to what we might have known years ago, all we relied on is what we'd been told and not what we'd personally learnt. But now we have the option to personally learn things ourselves through experiments and through utilising specialised equipment, which we didn't really have much of years ago. And I've got great respect for SPR and other scientific bodies. And they've had their, you know, they've had the time with this for a long time. Have they got any further? Well, in some areas, in regarding, you know, dream interpretation, telepathy and things like that, yeah, okay. But what about fixed hard phenomena, like paranormal in general, ufological stuff in general? I mean, we've never been involved in UAP because he never would have considered it to be, you know, righteous enough to be through the doors of the SPR, but they got to change because it is. And but they have done some good work, but the problem is that their method, I don't think, is going to be very successful because the phenomena likes to deal with people involved in experiments which are observers, experiencers, or believers. When you bring scientific people to the table during, you know, experimentals, the phenomena tends to take a step back. It's a weak link in the chain. And it shouldn't be, and it's frustrating, and I get it, because we want scientific people involved. But the problem is the success rate significantly drops. And it's like you've got to twist it all around. Rather than seeing is believing, believing is seeing. Mm. And the only best way I can describe that, and I've said this before, is like, how likely are you to see a religious apparition, you know, something of religious content, if you don't believe in religion? You're not likely to, well, I don't know of anybody who's seen or witnessed claims to have seen the Virgin Mary that wasn't religious or wasn't a Catholic, you know, so it works like that. You've got to have an acceptance for it, for the phenomena to come along and shake your hand. But when you're sceptic or cynic and come to the table, the phenomena kind of goes, takes a step back, the results drop significantly. So it's been a learning process of how we obtain and conduct those experiments with the right people. It takes a long time. But once we do get that finely tuned, then it can be quite mind-boggling about the things you might experience of what the limitations and the capabilities and the complexities of these phenomena can produce.
I sometimes feel a bit frustrated, Steve, personally, and I would imagine you're probably going to be singing from the same hymn sheet, because I'm having an interest in all 14 aspects, be it strange disappearances, strange lights in the sky, the abduction phenomenon, ghosts, hauntings, poltergeists, cryptids.
Same for me.
I'm fascinated by it all because, for me, it's all about pushing the boundaries of accepted knowledge, and millions of people are seeing something in a variety of forms. What that might be, we're still trying to, as you say, drill down to. But when we look at some of these early researches, like you say, there seems to have been this, like you, as you were explaining, in regards to everybody had their own boxes. And if anything fell outside those parameters, They either ignored it or they just thought, well, I'm just going to focus on what I have. And I've
it's been the problem for a long time, Paul, that compartmentalization, because what you didn't realise is that that's a vital part of your piece of your puzzle, and you've thrown it out because it doesn't fit into the regime of the box you're working in. The boxes have got to go, you know? And when we look at a whole phenomenology, we see the connections, we see the association between the various topics, where it's beyond coincidence that these things are interconnected, absolutely are interconnected. And unfortunately, somebody somewhere comes up with names. There must be somebody out there that comes up, well, what are we going to call this? Well, let me think. Oh, yeah, let's call it this. And it gets, you know, in parapsychological circles and ufological circles, we have the same things named different things. You know, in telepathy, regarding telepathic communication, UAP, UFO phenomena, is exactly the same as parapsychological circles as the transplacement phenomena. It's no different, exactly the same. But it's referenced two different things, and it's come from two different sides. But we've got to meet in the middle somewhere and say, okay, it's all the same. No, I mean, you can call it anything you want, but it is what it is. And that association between the paranormal and the ufological can't go unnoticed. It's impossible to go unnoticed. And if you do recognize it, then you've got to ask the question, how? Or even why, which is a bigger question. Why should we have the same things? Why should we have a phantom black shadow figure appear in somebody's bedroom at night, and they have the paralysis, which was referred under the paranormal paralysis? Then, but why should you have three small beings and light coming through the window at night in an alien abduction scenario, and you have the alien abduction paralysis? And it's both the same thing, but comes from two various different camps. And of course, it has been going on for a long time, even back in the days of Project Blue Book. The Blue Book officers were sent out, and it was all for show, really. I mean, they used to ring up the press and were saying, oh, we're going to see Mrs. Brown at 12 o'clock, and this is where she lives. So that when they get out of the car in their nice little uniforms, you know, we're just neatly pressed and everything, and they got the satchels under their arm, boy, these guys are doing a damn good job, because they're all being filmed and photographed in the newspaper. And it was just a big ploy, really, at the end of the day. They have any vigorous endeavours to try and provide any good data at all. I've looked through the report forms. It looks like a 12-year-old filled them out. Honest to God. But when, like, Mrs. Brown, this has happened on many occasions, as an example, Mrs. Brown turns around and says, well, it's very strange, you know, officer, because we had this UFO that appeared over the farm, and then we had a week of poltergeist-type stuff happening. The guys that turn around say, whoa, 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 Mrs. Brown, you know, let's just stick to the UFO facts, all the ghosty stuff. No, let's just stick to the UFO. And compartmentalization was being enforced back then in days of Project Blue Book, you know, because if you look through the files, you think, where's all the paranormal things? There's none. Where are they all? Now, I know when you go and talk to 1,000 witnesses of UFOs, they're all going to say something about the paranormal. Oh, well, by the way, this happened. Or by the way, we've been having these experiences. Or I've had experiences before. It's going to be mentioned. But it's not mentioned. And that's only because it has to be that they didn't want it. And they forced that compartmentalization. So I'm not going to get a clear picture here that it was telling us, screaming out to us years ago, even the days of Project Blue Book, when everybody's thinking, oh, yeah, about it's a solid crafting thing. Nobody was thinking about, would you not think it's something associated to consciousness and the people that perceive the phenomena? Didn't go down that road, you know? Mm. If they knew then, we would be light years ahead, but they didn't work it out. And that's basically because they threw it out with a baby with the bathwater, as they do, you know? But at least we're learning now, never throw anything out.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Well, it is. I mean, I've been reading an article today on Popular Mechanics, Steve, where they've been doing these experiments in regards to the cellular energy between life and death. And they're saying, hang on a minute, things aren't acting like we thought they were. As far as we were concerned, you live, you die, that's it.
Yeah.
And I've noticed over the last, I don't know, 3 or 4 years, probably since I saw the documentary series that was on Netflix, where they were talking about life after death experiences and some of the work that somebody like Leslie Keane's been involved in.
That
seems to have been a real seismic shift in that particular aspect of this strange phenomenon, because for years and years and years, people would always be dismissed as, well, it's your brain just firing images at you, your body's shutting down, you can't count on any of those experiences that you go through. And yet now it seems that strange things are going on and people have finally started thinking, I don't think it's as simple as saying these people are hallucinating.
No, no, they're not hallucinating. I mean, people like Leslie Keane and others have been utilised to help change the narrative. And basically what she did is she spent some time in the UK in regarding parapsychological experiments. And she put an article together which went out in, well, first national presses in the US and then an international press. And it was a great one-lining headline. It was like UFOs are connected with the paranormal. That's all it needed to say, you know, and that put a whole thing, a whole different spin on everything. People started looking into my area and they were like, wow, this is the same stuff. It's a, well, yeah, of course, but we've known this 20, 30 years. You know, you've just been ignorant to it. You know, people would not bring those two together. I mean, a stereotypical incident is in a poltergeist case, we had an apport take place which went under analysis. Not many people analyze apports. Why not? Did they never think of it? Paranormal investigators? It's an apport. Well, okay, there's your apport. Oh, it's very interesting. You might even be lucky enough to take a photograph. Nobody conducts any analysis. Can you prove it's the object that left? Is there a difference? There is a difference. But under analysis, you would know that. But when you conduct the analysis, you find a very profound, unique diathermic reaction, which is not normal. And you start to recognise that diathermic reaction you've seen before, and then you go and look through, and you end up in a UFO case, not a paranormal case, where a UFO was seen to not fly in but materialise, like a light bulb come on, close to the ground. People passing by witnessed it. It affected the plants where it was close to the ground. A team of specialists came out, took samples of the plants. It was known as a biological and chemical traumatology test that was carried out on those plants. And they found in it a very profound, unique diathermic alteration in the plants. So does that lend then to the hypothesis that the sudden appearance of an apport and the sudden appearance of a UFO utilise the same physics here? A physics which is beyond our physics, but is recognisable through diathermic alteration. You know, the science is very interesting, you know, and that's just one of thousands in paranormal mechanics that we specialise in. And with this, because there's so much now, it's not a vague guess that these things are connected. They are connected to the point where you might consider it's all the same source of phenomena presenting itself in various different ways. And that's where it starts getting very intriguing, you know, because the more you look into areas of profoundness, you'll find those key elements. And it shouldn't be. I mean, look, if it was like what they said back in the 80s, UFOs are coming from some distant planet on the other side of the galaxy, whatever. And paranormal is accepted in the 1980s as an earthly origin, an age-old earthly origin. Then why those two things should be so intertwined is very, very strange. Because we can see mass differences just from species from one part of the world to another, you know. So we have variation, but the variation is not there, even if we're dealing with something that's on the other side of the galaxy. So it's, you know, it doesn't make much sense. So it's like, yeah, these are the fundamental blocks of phenomena, the source or whatever that represents. And we've got to find new methods of how we actually truly take it. We forget looking at the big picture anymore, because that's what people have been doing for years. It's the paranormal. Oh, what is it within the paranormal? Well, we've got haunting phenomena. Oh, you break your haunting phenomena. Oh, yeah, it's residual or it's intelligent. Right, okay, so you got residual intelligence. And then you look into the poltergeist, so you got to break that into five different times, you know, because it's crazy. It's the way, this is what they do. Break it down, break it down, break it down, break it down, break it down. And you end up with one thing it needed, one terminology, ends up with 100. For no apparent reason, because it's not worthy for science anyway. So they look at the whole picture, but what we've got to do is go retro and say, well, how did you get that picture? What's it consist of? When you say a poltergeist disturbance, what does that consist of? So you take it apart slowly but surely, and you end up with, okay, well, you've got the apport phenomena. You know, that's just one part of the puzzle. Okay, let's look at the apport phenomena. Let's plow all the science just into that. And then when we realise that apports are very likely quantum anchors for the phenomena to deliver to the location, because it's left something there, would mean that the poltergeist disturbances might be managed to the point where there are multiple locations being affected simultaneously. Hence, nearly in every paranormal poltergeist infestation, you've always got items that turn up that don't belong. It's just a matter of it's going like this, you know. Yeah. We got to look at things in a whole different science, to be honest with you. So, but we are moving forward, and you know, the days of the old ghost hunting and things is gone. You're not going to get any more data from that. You know, we've got to get past all that. Though it's fun and entertaining for people, but sometimes it's not always fun. Sometimes, and you know, there is a dark side to the phenomena sometimes. So. But at least we're moving forward. That's the main thing.
Do you think it's not as wrapped up in gatekeepers as it used to be, Steve? That because primarily, I would imagine as well, the connectivity of social media and things like YouTube have allowed people to break free of the shackles of their personal circumstances in their local area, that, you know, their local organisation might be very set in their ways or dyed in the wool with their belief systems. And regardless of which way you come at it, be it religious, scientific, true believer, skeptic, as much as we all like to think sometimes that we're open-minded, occasionally you will come across a case or you will hear of an experience that will make you question just how open-minded you are, Steve. And I've done that on several topics and realised that, you know, I needed to be more open-minded, but not so much that my brain's falling out of my ear, of course.
Yeah,
but in a way that I'm not...
I totally get it.
I'm not biased, even though I think it's unconscious bias. Whether you believe it's happening or not, you still have those set parameters, even if you don't think you have.
Absolutely. I mean, the problem is that we're bringing belief into it, and it's not required. You know, I mean, for people who are experiencers, it's not a matter of did they believe. You know, it's a matter of this is what happened, and they'll tell you that. and I thought I'd seen it all. You know, but that got raised and raised and raised, and simply through the experiments, communications with NHI, specialized equipments on location, traveling the world to do experiments, it's raised the bar time and time again. So just when you think, okay, I've been very lucky because I've seen things that some people probably never will do in their life. Something else comes along and blows that out of the water, you know, replaces it with something which is literally more unbelievable. To the point where you realise one day is that our perceptions of the phenomena is totally controlled by the phenomena. Mm. Every single aspect of it, we cannot trust any of our senses, none of them, because the phenomena can make play with them and cause deception. And that's where the big problem lies, is because sometimes you'll experience something which is just, you're not going to talk about. Because people say, I'm never going to believe it. You know, even I might say, well, God, if I hadn't seen it and I hadn't been with somebody else that saw the same thing, I would have thrown it out as I had some type of episode, you know. But yeah, you get challenged by this phenomena to the profound absurdity. and you really do question then about their capabilities. They are tremendous with puppets on a string, really, I think.
I suppose one of the things that's always struck me about your work, Steve, is that you're one of those people that seems to go and help those kinds of people that might feel ostracized or left behind. I know you've done a lot of work in regards to assisting council tenants and people renting.
Well, yes, because when we launched the scientific establishment of parapsychology back in the 90s, we wrote a protocol for city councils and private landlords, because the laws had changed and it had switched to the tenants having more rights than the landlords. That's the way it rumbles, you know. But sometimes what was happening is that some tenants were lying about having paranormal disturbances and utilising this situation to get out of paying rent, believe it or not, because they can't, according to the rules, you are living in a place where it's just not viable to, it's not good to, then you can renege from paying the rent. And it was a way out. And the private landlords and councils got stuck in a rut because they didn't know how to deal with this situation. So we wrote a protocol for Manchester City Council, and that got duplicated and shared right across the whole country. And about six years ago, I was in conversations with Stirling Council in regarding that protocol and how to make use of it and apply it. It protects them as landlords, but also at the same time, it controls the situation under the tenancy agreement. So they'd never been done before, so, you know. But it was quite surprising that how many people had reported some types of disturbances. If you're a landlord, you've got 10,000 houses, you might get a report now and again. Absolutely. Is it viable or not? Well, we don't know. What happened was I ended up on the Manchester's public relations page. It's something they had online, public relations, and it was listed about our work. And we were asked to conduct our first confidential corporate investigation, which was for the Ministry of Defence and then Courtilla Properties. And it was, we became the only establishment in the UK to provide this service, which was confidential. You know, we would sit down, they would become our clients. We have their best interests at heart. We're dealing with the situation. We're conducting vigorous research, but we're also dealing with people who may have witnessed the phenomena, private interviews, that sort of thing. So we're controlling the scope of the outcome, making sure it doesn't go to press because they've got to rent these places or offices or whatever they are at the end of the day. So I ended up with 16 or 17 years involved in that, and it got escalated to the point where we worked with the police, London CID, law enforcement units, all sorts, the exotic animal register, historical societies, all sorts of different things we ended up involved in. But that was trying to assist the whole situation for businesses and clients. And things. Mm. On the other side is the residential investigations, and we don't get involved many of them unless it has to tick the box, and that box means that it's trauma. Yeah. It's trauma-induced phenomenon. It's traumatizing. There's children involved. Or then yes, you know, as a priority, we would go in and assist as best we can. And we have doctors and we have psychologists, professionals who could deal with the thing. It's not for some ghost hunter to come along and try and advise somebody about how to deal with traumatic experiences. It's not their job. They're not skilled to do that. And we got involved in some very high-profile cases over the years. Only one of a number of people which were allowed into certain places because of who we were and what we'd done. The whole point was trying to help people. It's not about the phenomena. Yeah. You know, when it's about people at the end of the day, and if they're going through trauma, and you don't want people to go through this trauma. You want to try and ease the situation as best you can, especially if there's children involved. So it was always about the highest thing on the list is the clients. Phenomena was not high on our list. We don't need a photo. We don't need to capture an EVP. It's about them. And the whole management was done completely different. So we were kept purposefully by academics and businesses and throughout the UK and authorities, we were kept separated from the ghost groups and that sort of thing. I mean, even SCP now, if you look for SCP, you won't find anything because it's a private business. It's a private establishment which deals in privacy. So you're not going to get like, oh, yeah, we're doing tours or we're going to go on this house and do this. It's private. And people ask me, so I can't find anything. Well, you won't find anything because it's not for the general public. It's for the corporate companies on who've got our details who will contact us. And I tell you, we worked for Woolworths, Booth Supermarket, a lot of businesses, shops, stores, offices, inns, public houses, city councils, private landlords, you know, football ground, as you'd say. Yeah. But you know what? We're there to help and we are confidential. Now, there's a CAP document. We call it a CAP because it's a confidentiality assurance policy. It lasts for 10 years. So when we do that investigation, we send our reports back to the clients. Mm-hmm. We have sit-down meetings. Sometimes if the evidence points to, yes, there is phenomena taking place, then we will work, associate with them, with clients on both sides to have them relocated if necessary. And that location then is dealt with under our protocol in regarding prior to being rented out or used again. It's a whole different thing. When you talk about groups going out and doing stuff, it's a thrill for them. It's very mundane. There's a lot of paperwork that's involved. You're having corporate meetings around corporate tables with these companies. You know, it's because they've got a manager, they've got a management that can't deal with it.
Yeah.
You can't manage it. That's the problem. You've got staff. Got 18 members of staff that won't work past 7 o'clock at night, that won't work on one quadrant of the building. It's a management that you know, people think, oh, that's really interesting. It's really, but it's a terrible management situation. Financially, it's destructive. So we have to control and do as best we can. And that's also looking at the management side of things and how we can better it for them. It's been interesting. And we still do corporate things. But like I say, that confidentiality assurance policy lasts for 10 years. If we go back to them 10 years later and if they say, look, do you know what? We're not too bothered. Then we will release it. And there's been a few that we've released. Sunlight House was one in Manchester, yes, which released because they didn't think that they needed to do another 10 years on it. So it got out. It was allowed out. So it got out. But most of our stuff doesn't get out because you'll find these companies will just keep it under the CAP document it's 10 years, I'll extend it another 10. Because sometimes they just think to themselves, it's bad press, especially if you're trying to sell something or rent something, offer a service which could be influenced by belief. So it's a tricky situation, but it's fun. We were the only, I think as far as I'm aware, we're the only people that are involved. We used to get calls from the police. It got a bit out of hand sometimes because we just couldn't do it all. There's only so many of us. There's only so much work we can do, you know, but then there is nobody else we could pass it on to, not a corporate case like that, you know. So, but residential ones, about 98 or 99% of them, when people would get in touch with me, I pass them through to people who I think are responsible for enough to be able to deal with them. SCP wouldn't really get involved unless it was a real significant case, like we did with Keith Linder in Seattle. That became an SCP case after quite some time, but it did, you know, so because of the problems he was having.
I suppose it is strange, I think, sometimes when we seem to just presume that organisations and companies wouldn't be having these problems, Steve. And yet, why wouldn't they? You look at the amount of buildings, the age of some of them. I mean, this nonsensical idea that if you've thrown a supermarket up somewhere, well, it can't possibly be haunted because we only built this 5 years ago. Well, hang on, what was there before? You know, what was going on there? Was there any strange reports in that particular...
Just like Boo's supermarket in Knutsford, the cap came out of cap document that, so it wasn't under confidentiality anymore. It came out. It was built all over the old gallows. Actually, where they used to hang them is on aisle 7. Seriously. Yeah. It was like, what the hell? You know? But and they're going on about, and it was interesting because, you know, there was very high shelves, but Mr. Boo wanted it making look nice, Boo's supermarkets, you know, they're a little bit more upmarket. Yeah. So he had all these plants, rubbery fake plants all put on the top, so it all looks nice. Yeah. And there was only one real plant in the whole store, big cheese plant. It weighed a bloody ton, took about 6 people to get it up there. And one night that somehow ended up on the floor in one of the aisles and dragged up and down several aisles. Oh. And there were nobody in store. You know, and that was just one of many, many things that were happening there. So things were problematic. Things were flying off shelves and, you know, so it went through certain problems there. But it's basically because, like you say, what's connection to it is, well, the spike of activity is taking place where the gallows are on AL7. So as soon as it came out of CAP document, We relinquish all control. We say, okay, well, this will get released. If you want it released, you can have it released. Otherwise, you have to. All you got to do is sign it. There's no charge for it. Just say you want it under another 10 years of confidentiality or not. Oh no, it's okay. So it comes out. Of course, when it comes out, all the press pick up on it and make a field day over it, as they do. And that happens a lot with the cases that we do. We end up in the press, you know. Sometimes it's the opposite. Sometimes we've totally destroyed the case because there's no truth to it whatsoever, like we did with the Stocksbridge paranormal incidents that took place for Stocksbridge Council, you know, which we talked to. There was even fake police reports. Nobody would think of you get a fake police report, but the fake police report. So, yeah, I mean, it's about the truth at the end of the day. So it's interesting, though, because behind closed doors, people do have problems in businesses regarding phenomena, and they don't have a method of how to deal with it. So who do they call? Terrible pun, but who do they? You know, I mean, at the end of the day, it's the last people you want to be ringing up is some ghost hunter team or ghostbuster team to come round because they're not going to do nothing for you. We need a proper management agency who knows how to deal with this on a professional level that's good for us as being the clients. And also it controls the situation so it doesn't get out of hand in regarding tenants or people are privately renting places. And that's where we get involved. In regards to police, I mean, we've dealt with profound disappearances, paw print, scat and hair analysis of wild cats in the UK, working alongside the Exotic Animal Register. Mm-hmm. We've also had cases we've been involved in, some which I can't say because the very high profile cases which have been reopened because of new information has not been obtained by paranormal means. So it's those things do happen, but you won't hear of them very often, to be honest with you. They don't want that information out, understandably. You know, but yes, it does happen, you know, and quickly news passed around the whole country. They're utilising the protocol that we wrote many years ago. But it works. It works. It's just a business protocol.
Yeah.
But it works for them and it protects them and it gives them a process of how to deal with this situation because... Guarantee, you know, yeah, somebody rings up the council and says, I can't live in my home anymore. There's stuff going on. And we're not getting any rest. We get no sleep. It's terrible. Absolutely terrible. There's no way I'm not paying my rent anymore. What's that person on the other line going to say? They're not going to say much because we won't have a clue what to say, to be honest with you. And I'll go and talk to somebody and they won't have a clue.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, it needed to be addressed, to be honest with you, for business sakes, to be honest.
Yeah. I think it's also, like you said, you've got to deal with this on a case-by-case basis because it's very easy. There are these cliches about people who rent council property, for example, but they'll pretend that the house is haunted because they want somewhere bigger or they want a better view or something.
Yeah, they just want to move.
Yeah. Yeah. But obviously there are still some cases that have come along that are terrifying for those residents.
Mm.
And you've just got to be able to deal with them. I mean, I've seen, sometimes you can read stories in the local press, and I think if they've gone to the press, then I think there's a little bit more, it looks like they're trying to embarrass the council. Whereas if they're absolutely terrified, and like you say, we've got children involved, pets involved, whatever, and there's a trauma being built here, then usually they will try their damnedest to do everything. They will get, you know, word of a word, and somebody will say, oh, we'll send our friend round. She's the local psychic. And they'll come round and say, well, you've got this and you've got that. And sometimes they're just grasping at straws to try and calm these people down. But on occasions then, Steve, what they have to do then is to go through the correct channels and have you guys come and evaluate it.
Absolutely. It's usually gone too far by then, to be honest with you. I mean, the idea is to take control of this situation. If you've already gotten to the point where it's already in the press and you've got psychics coming around and stuff, the media will just spin that forever.
Mm.
And it'll cause more and more and more bad press for the company, you see. So it's, you know, they've got to rent, they want to rent their homes at the end of the day. You know, so it's a vicious cycle. You try and get in there and resolve that under the protocol we provide long before it reaches that, to be honest, because, you know, your first thing would be under the Tenancy Agreement Act is that a new section has to be added regarding confidentiality, you know, that's like an NDA. It's like, you know, okay, we're dealing with the matter, but whilst we're under investigation and dealing with the matter, you can't talk about it.
Mm.
You know, you can't go to the press, you can't do this, you can't do that. It's, you know, it's under management, you know, so it's all down how it's dealt with. Unfortunately, they get stung because they don't know. Actually, the only time they're contacting me or our establishment is because it's already happened to them and they've already been stung, you know. And it was the whole fleet of houses in South Manchester, about 9 or 10 of them all joined together where they had to clear the whole lot out because of disturbances, you know. So it's, and the council did go public with it at the time because they didn't know how to, bad management again, should have been sacked, this guy. But the housing officer went public and ended up on one of the Strange But True episodes, I believe. He should have been struck off him as a business, for a business sense. This is, but they didn't know how to deal with it. They thought, how do we deal with this? It was just, and of course it all became very hyped up. It was bad for the business. But and it wasn't great for the tenants, to be honest with you, how it was managed. So yeah, it's the whole process of protection and making things, people's lives easier and better, and not just for the business, but for the residents as well. Really,
I mean, I remember that particular case, Steve, because it was one of those first instances where you seem to have a multiple property infestation that became public knowledge. Because often these kind of cases, people would dismiss as, oh, well, the neighbours have been talking and therefore they've wound everybody up.
I only believe, I mean, when I looked into that after the matter, should we say, I believe there was only two properties which were adversely affected. But the other ones, people talk. And before you know it, everybody's got it going on. And it got out of hand. It was one of those situations that they lost control over, you know, and it became quite well known. And that was the earmark. That was what we refer to as the earmark. We actually reference that as the earmark is the place where it's the place of no return. So you don't want any. We used to use that as examples in councils. We're having conversations with them or private landlords. That's the gone beyond the point of return, you know. So we earmark that and say, this is a scenario of what you don't want to happen. Because these tenants, they had to rehouse these old tenants, and it took, I believe, just almost 16 months to get them all rehoused. And, you know, not one of them paid any rent in, what, I think it think it was about 8 or 9 properties.
Yeah.
For that length of time.
It's a lot of money.
And then what did you do with it afterwards? Because it's already been in the press. How many people want to move in there? Do you know, it's just a nightmare. It's just like having, it's just like saying, it's like selling a car that's been in a terrible crash.
Yeah.
Oh, it's okay. Don't worry. It's fine. You know, nobody's going to buy it. Nobody wants it. You know, and this is the situation now. I don't want to move in that house. Well, you can, you know, I mean, it's, yeah, it gets a bad rap. And it goes on for years that sometimes. You know, oh, don't go to that council. They do that. Oh, that's been, you know, so, yeah, it escalates easily out of control.
Do you think those kind of cases are less these days because people are a bit more savvy, Steve, and they can see sometimes the wool being tried to be pulled over people's eyes? Or do you think that they still occur, and but it's just dealt with in a more mature and sensible manner?
Not always, no. You just don't get to hear about them. I mean, we deal with these things, and it's ridiculous. I mean, in fact, you know, you don't hear about it, but there's been people who've been gone taken to court because it's been found out that they were causing the damage to the properties themselves. One couple from Romania, which were rehoused in the Manchester region, I can't give any names and places, of course, set fire to their own kitchen, blaming it on poltergeist-type disturbances, and it was investigated thoroughly by professionals, and it was concluded that they'd done the damage themselves, and they were taken to court and dealt with appropriately. But, you know, and so, ridiculous things do go on. You know, you just don't hear about them.
Yeah.
Because if we're dealing with it, you're not going to hear about it. It's not going to get in the press. Mm. You know, it's as simple as that because it's conditional. So, I mean, even if it goes to court, you know, we'd be advising their solicitors that it's a conditional. It's conditional that it's NDA. They can't talk about this. They can't go on about this afterwards and this, that, and the other. You know, you want an outcome from this as tenants to be relocated and stuff like that. Okay, well, you're going to be sued, obviously, for the damage to the property. They have the rights to reject you as a client, as a tenant. If they want to, but if they do want to still assist, well, they will do, but it'll be under NDA. I mean, you can't just have people, you know, shaking your hand 1 minute and then trying to destroy your company behind the back. So, yeah, so you see, sometimes they are real problems. And we assess the situation, go back and report, like we did with the Rochdale poltergeist case for Rochdale Council. We had them relocated. You know, because we found evidence that they are actually telling the truth. They were.
Well, it always reminds me of that case from Derbyshire, Steve, several years ago, where I think two sisters had lived in a property for years. They sold it, and the people that bought the house ended up trying to take it to court.
That was a three-story building in Derbyshire.
Yeah, up at Mayfield, I think it was, wasn't it?
Was it something like that? Yeah, we were. And I can remember we've done so many. I remember dealing with one in Derbyshire. And it went to court because they were trying to sue the two sisters. Yeah. We were involved. It was one of our cases.
Yeah.
And then we ended up back in court some years later. And the reason being is because they tried to adopt two children. And there was a bit of an investigation into the welfare of these two children that they had adopted. And it was the same family. They had adopted them. And it came out in court because their opposing solicitor tried to drag all the incidents of paranormal phenomena up. The evidence to support the phenomena was zero, and they were crying poverty when he was actually building an extension at the back to join onto the house. You know, so you know, we were involved in that case through a couple of friends. From another organisation, so and become heavily involved in that, and we ended up being dragged back again years later because of that. So that was quite a high profile case because it was all over the news at the time about this family trying to adopt these children, and it had been brought up that they'd had poltergeist stuff and this, that, and the other. It all got drunk up into court, and they asked us, they questioned us in regarding the investigation and what we found, and unfortunately, it didn't go in their favour. But we're not there to, you know, we stay truthful and we say, look, if we don't find the evidence, just because we don't find evidence, we don't say that they were faking it.
Yeah.
What we do say is that we just basically concluded that we could not find any evidence to support their claims.
Mm.
And we didn't. You know, and if it was disturbances, as they say, because we know how Poltergeist, we know how it ticks.
Yeah.
We were there for a while and, yeah, you know, so, and then as soon as you leave, you get all these fanciful stories, you know. So, yeah, it didn't win the court case, of course, trying to sue these previous owners. You know, but that's how it should be, really, to be honest with you.
It is, and it's surprising how that particular incident gets brought up, but obviously without all the facts behind it, Steve. Because you won't hear about it all. No.
You won't hear about all of that stuff because SCP were involved and there's a lot more to it. All you hear is about, oh, yeah, this family saying that they were attacked in the night and this, that and the other, and they were suing the previous owners who didn't tell us it was... Well, they don't have to. There's no law saying that. There's only 5 states in the US you have to do that.
Yeah.
And that's only not as a thing that you would say you might be passable within court. It's an advisory by the state to advise to people that if you think you have paranormal disturbances and you're selling your home, to advise them of that. It doesn't say you've got to tell them, you know? So, yeah, I mean, it is no place in the UK you do. No place at all. You know?
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. Social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Well, I think it just shows as well, Steve, in good stead, because often when you try and talk about these subjects or you have the reputation or whatever, people will all presume that you will be promoting and supporting such allegations and such cases. But I think, for me, it's vitally important that you call them out when you find them, because it can not only damage the field, it can tarnish everybody involved in it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we know how they plan, the way they work and what they're trying to achieve, you know, and usually it's finances that's usually at the top of the list. I mean, we've dealt with not even council, private landlords, Cheshire Housing Group, which is a private landlord. We dealt with a case for them, you know, and it was a foreign family that had moved in and they weren't paying rent. And we had a financial check done on the family and they weren't struggling financially whatsoever. They were lies. So all our job was to do is to, yeah, at that time, was just to provide that financial document to the Cheshire Homes. And the case was resolved, you know. I mean, some people have even had priests in, and we've had to go and deal with priests, you know. And they can be tricky sometimes, priests. Because they don't like us coming in and questioning them, you know. But sometimes they do wrong, and we find evidence of that, and we have to write some very stern letters to them, which we have done in the past. In Middleton, actually, was one of the worst places. So. But yeah, it's interesting, you know. But then, you know, you can't let things just fly. But at the end of the day, You're there to do a job, and you're providing the information, you gather the information, and you're providing it to the clients. That could go either way, because you could go to the clients like Cheshire Homes and say, well, do you know what? The evidence supports that the phenomenon is taking place there. We can confirm this, 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 and this. Mm. And this is what we advise you to do under the circumstances. So it's gone in their favour, the tenants. But sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it goes in the other. So we're just there to cut a fair deal, but at the same time, look after both sides of the parties here, so that there's no problems for either parties, and you know, it gets out of hand, because at the end of the day, you've got business that's involved and people's lives as well. So it's a bit tricky sometimes.
Do you think that's more dangerous in this day and age, Steve, where you can simply get the local ghost hunting group to turn up and live stream and running around a house?
Well, that does happen a lot. It doesn't help situations. I mean, we've been called out to sometimes, which we take on board, what we refer to as clean-ups. Because yes, they've had teams in, these ghost hunter guys, and then they brought these people round, these witch wicker people, and they even elderly people, and it's wrong, you know, have been charged for services, because they're just being taken for a ride.
Yeah.
And it gets ridiculously out of hand. And when that happens, you know, we have to look after them. We have to make sure that everybody's protected.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the key thing here, because with the greatest respect, there will always be people, especially in this particular field, like you were saying about the priests, and we've been talking earlier on about belief systems, Steve.
Yeah, nobody would ever think of a priest that would be involved in lying and deceit. Mm. And it was clear what they'd done, and, you know, we had to express professionally our concerns. So, yeah, you know, nobody would think that. There are people, they're just people at the end of the day.
Mm.
And people do some very silly things.
Yes.
Especially when it's rewarding for them, you know.
Yeah.
And that's the case happens. And it happens, yeah. You know, and it's like police reports. You know, we find fake police reports and, well, it didn't really happen, did it? And yeah, it did. Well, no, it didn't, because we've checked of where you actually were at the time, and this is the location. You can't even see that place from there.
Mm.
How can you, you know, can you explain that? And it's like, so we have to cross even examine reports done by the police, because they're inaccurate or the lies in some absolute outright lies sometimes, you know, especially regarding the Stocksbridge paranormal incidents.
Mm. Mm. I mean, when you look in regards to some of these cases, I mean, one of the ones I was always fascinated with, Steve, was I believe it was a three-story house in Wigan, where you had just one particular spot that seemed to be...
Oh, the column effect haunted.
Yes, which I'd never heard of until I saw you speak about it several years ago.
Yeah, they don't happen very often, but you can get them, column effect hauntings. And there were three separate apartments or flats, you could say. And they're identical, actually. It's like walking to the same place, you know. Yeah. They're just laid out the same, and it's the same part of the of that apartment which has been adversely affected, mostly. And it's like it's the same thing as well. So it's like a column of, it's just all three floors are being adversely affected simultaneously. And it's column effect hauntings. Yeah, I mean, it's just that people haven't documented them before. I'm sure they've been. It must have been others. Yeah, especially people that say, where's your activity taking place? And you say, oh, it's in a lounge. I said, and where else? In my bedroom. And you turn out the bedroom's above the lounge. But did people even think that? Or is it just, oh, it's just, yeah, it's just two different rooms. Well, no, it's exactly above, you know, the location. So in many two-story buildings, that could be happening. But you definitely start to recognise it when you're dealing with blocks of flats.
Yes.
And you've got the same thing happening. And then you go and talk to them, they're saying exactly the same thing the other person. And you know they've not even talked to them yet. Mm. There's not been a communication. So, and that's really interesting, because you're getting first-hand data without them communicating with each other. So no information's come over from the other side, you know. So you're dealing with raw information. But it is interesting, yeah. And sometimes, you know, you do find some things which are hooking. Sometimes you clearly don't. And there's good air. They do need help. They need relocating, or they need to. Now, it doesn't matter how many TV shows or how many people will claim they get rid of phenomena. They don't get rid of phenomena. What happens sometimes is you get a suppression in phenomena. But how many times do people go back? and say, oh, Mrs. Smith, we were out here 2 months ago. How is it now? Because Mrs. Smith is going to turn around and say, no, they were bloody useless. I've got it all come back again. You don't get to hear that. You sometimes get suppressions.
Yeah.
But especially when priests and things are around doing the old blessings and things. Blessings are only 12% successful.
Mm.
We have the stats, you know. Yeah. So it's not always, doesn't always work.
Yeah.
And you can't just say to these things, you know, stop. Well, I've sent them to the light.
Yeah.
Very good, you know, but it doesn't work like that.
Well, I've always questioned that kind of response because I always wonder, well, how do they know the religious following of what they're dealing with?
Well, exactly. Yeah, exactly. I think most of it's placebo. I mean, yes. If you can convince the people living in the house that has done some good, then it'll do some good. Absolutely. I actually have been involved with some priests that have resolved literally all disturbances after a significant undertaking at the home. And it's just ceased and never returned. So they are beneficial sometimes, but is it down to that the family were present and they believed it would work and therefore it's worked? So therefore it's the placebo's taken over and it's not just that as well. I think there's a bit more to it. There's placebos involved. But I think we can somehow affect our own environment.
Oh, yes.
You know, by the way we think and feel and, you know, and that sort of thing. It's not just about taking control, but it's subconsciously dealing with that as well.
Oh, very much so. I think there's a lot of fuel that's available for whatever's causing certain phenomena, Steve, in certain environments.
Oh, yes.
It's all unconscious, but it's there under the surface and it's just bubbling away until it pops.
It happens. You know, what's interesting about poltergeist disturbances, it's a little bit different. Hauntings, you know, people move into haunted buildings and then they realise, oh my God, this thing's going on. Get rid of it. Get rid of it. And you moved into the haunted environment. You're the fly in the glass. You moved into it. I said, you know, hauntings last for many, many years. You can flap your hands as much as you want, but this stuff might be still here in 500 years' time. So, you know, you've got to learn how to deal with that.
Yeah.
But in poltergeist disturbances, you know, if we do starve the phenomena, there's a process of starving the phenomena because we know poltergeist phenomena is part of our process, our protocols, as well as dealing with poltergeist, is that they are vexator-driven. They are stress-driven, fear-driven. Yeah. They're parasitic. Mm. And they get that from the people that witness the phenomena, and that's the people that live in the home. They witness it on purpose. It's a show. You know, it's a put on a show, so you know there's absolutely no way it couldn't be anything else but paranormals for you to get upset and vexed about it. So I will utilize that stress and energies from you to create the next disturbance or next act. And it's a vicious cycle. But when we can use a protocol referred to as starving the phenomenon, it's educating and getting the witnesses to deal with this in a certain way. But once they realise and take control over that, they adversely affect the phenomenon and it just fizzles out. So, but there's a guidance report. On the report, it's different with haunted, but on the poltergeist stuff, we say, right, okay, we have something called tremor there. So it's broken down. It's just, you know, no tampering, no Ouija boards, no seances, no doing anything in the house. Yeah. And no renovations, no extensions, no altercations, no modifications, tremor, you know. So and we say that purposeful because when you do things like that in an environment, it upsets the electromagnetics in the home. That spike of electromagnetics is like sparking two wires of an engine.
Yeah.
And once that sparks up, that poltergeist disturbance, the phenomena, is going to come back exactly where it left off. It's not going to go through the knockings and the sounds and just audible disturbances first and then into the, you know, into the object manipulation and then into the physical touching and then whatever, apparitional, whatever. No, it's going to come back exactly where it left off. Don't do it. And sometimes we've had the odd person, it's forgotten, decided to knock down this wall and make this room bigger and this, that, and the other. And all hell breaks loose 3 days in.
Yeah.
And they're screaming down the phone and I said, well, did you not listen? Where's your protocol sheet? Oh, I've got it in this drawer somewhere. Did you actually even read it? I said, we told you. We don't just tell them. You know, we have to, yeah. We give it up in paperwork, but we have to tell them. Mm. So we also told you. Oh, they totally forgot. And those things do happen. You know, we had some poltergeists which are bent on trying to kill the people in the environment. One girl got pushed down the stairs, broke her leg. It was turning on the gas fire in the cooker. It was trying to gas them.
Yeah.
Poor little dog got a beating, you know, and you know, some bad stuff does go on sometimes, which we've dealt with. You know, and you've got to take control. And of course, they forget. They forget it. They think, oh, it's all gone. And, you know, a few months later, let's knock this wall down, Fred. What do you think? It'll make this room look really nice. Three days later, I got a frantic phone call. You know, I've had phone calls where this thing chased them up the stairs. It was about 8 foot tall, but you couldn't see its feet. You couldn't see its hands. Its extremities were see-through, but it thumped its way up angrily up the staircase after three girls and the mother, which in a frantic and hysterical state ran into the front bedroom and barricaded that bedroom door. Now, some people think, well, it couldn't have just come through. Well, maybe, but it didn't. And I get a call at, say, 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, and they're saying, can you come round? Can you come and help and stuff? And I get there, and I can see them in the top upstairs room, windows open, and they're crying out, we can't get out the room. I said, well, what do you mean you can't get out the room? Well, in this complete frantic state, the adrenaline's pumping. They're literally throwing cupboards and drawers and wardrobes in front of the door. And afterwards, and they calmed down, they're like struggling to move the stuff out the door. They barricaded themselves in. So I was there half an hour trying to tell them to try and get that door open. Eventually she did. And I've had other places, you know, I did an investigation in Wales. The whole farm went up in flames mysteriously. But there were some bad things going on there. But it started with the moving in. They had a back bedroom. They put a pool table in there for the boys. It doesn't have a window. This room, and it was set up for the boys. They played a pool a couple of times on it, and as one of the disturbances was that they heard big bangs and noises coming from that room. They went to get in there, they couldn't get in. Pool table, they pushed itself against the door, but there's nobody in there, and there's no windows. You know, so. Yeah, just things like that you kind of realise, you know. So, but yeah, there's some interesting things that do go on, for sure.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
I suppose as well, when you get that kind of situation, Steve, that's when you kind of think moving a pool table is not an easy thing, even for three or four men to try and achieve, never mind anybody else.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've seen a metal, single metal filing cabinet, rectangular filing cabinet you pull out the drawer. You look at the front of it, it's perfectly rectangular. As you look down the side of it, it's like somebody's it's like it's been in a vice. Somebody's held the front and twisted the back of it right round so that it's all distorted at the back in the opposite direction as to the front. And that was discovered in one of these rooms. You don't know how these things, the energy it's involved to actually do this, but it's enough to scare the family to death, to be honest with you. And there are some, you know, some darker things we've come across. Not so often. We don't come across it often. I mean, it's not like a, you know, horror films, as we say, but there has been a few occasions where there has been things of a darker nature that's been involved, you know, but not very often.
You think that's one of the other modern problems, Steve, is the perception that every haunting is dark, depending on which channel you watch.
Well, with the work we've done, we realise kind of everywhere's haunted, really. Mm. It's only when they want to interact with you in that environment, it becomes a haunted building.
Yes.
Otherwise, they're just ignoring you and going about the business. Mm. You would not know any different. You know, you ask people, do you live in a haunted house? Well, no. Why? How do you know? Well, I've never experienced anything. I said, right. I never asked you if you'd experienced anything. I asked you if you lived in a haunted home. You see what I mean? So it's all down to, we've had people under social conditioning experiments that we've taken them into our environments. Under SCP, we do these social experiments, took them into an environment, and literally over maybe about 3 or 4 months, they made it haunted through the power of belief, prior knowledge, expectation. So it's those things employed. You literally, I think people can make places haunted, you know, or trap the phenomena, or conjure the phenomena in the sense of speaking through it, so it to take on its own. Well, we know this from the, you know, from the Philip experiment in Ontario from the 1970s. So it's,
of course, yeah.
You know, and prior to that, you know, we know that from the Sorrett experiment. So it's, and there's been these further ones down, has been taking place as well, more commonly in the future. So, we're very much involved, even though that we don't know it sometimes, in regarding where phenomena might be present.
It's fascinating, isn't it, really? Because
it really is.
I mean, when I was a younger person, Steve, I had a set of ideals, especially about poltergeist infestations, because I just find them fascinating. And I'm more fascinated in them now because I've realised, like you said, it's not, it's type A, type B, type C. You've got such a myriad of things going on.
Mechanism's amazing. Mm. Yeah, I mean, it's quite interesting because there is like a mechanism. It is a bit like a rule book. Mm. Poltergeist phenomena always do the same things, you know, and they follow a progressive pattern from audible disturbances to object manipulation to physical manipulation to apparitional, and then you start getting into the oppression, and then you get into the 3Ds. The 3Ds is the demonic three things, if it gets that far, but it rarely ever does, to be honest with you. The accuracy on poltergeist infestations being documented accurately is only about 40%, you know, so it's a good 60% it isn't.
Yeah.
But we do know that there's a mechanism at play, definitely. And once you start to pull down the curtain and look at the moving parts, the mechanism, for instance, displacement, objects disappear. Objects turn up. Well, where was it, Mrs. Smith? Oh, it was on that table over there. Where did you find it? It was on here next to the television. You didn't move it. She said, no. So how many years has that been going on for in poltergeist disturbances? Forever.
Yeah.
Did anybody actually ever measure the distance from point A to point B?
Mm-hmm.
Well, people might say, well, no, why? Because that measurement keeps turning up. Again, again, and again. Mechanism. And people just don't think about it. It's just like analysing apples or measure the displacement of an object from one point to the other. You know, it's just when you realise there's a mechanism at play. And, you know, and this is why they're good at mathematics and this is why they're clever. But one thing they're not good at, all phenomena, it's not good at reading and writing. No matter what phenomena you're dealing with, it's like a child.
Yeah.
They're terrible at writing. They're terrible at spelling. The only time you'll get decent information like that is when it's transplaced directly onto film from cameras. Then it's done. But I think it's a different process for them. That processing information, all they're doing is they grab it, like blinking at a book.
Yeah.
It goes into your mind and then, boom, you've just put it on the film. That's all they're doing. So it's not really their effort. It's just somebody else is writing and they're putting it on film or whatever. When it comes to them writing or come to them reading, they're lousy. They're useless at it. They're not very good. It's not their forte. They're good at maths. They can do mathematics pretty well. You know, and they know their ABCs, really, I suppose. But then so does a seven-year-old, you know. So it's, you know, and it's this is the thing with it, is that the mechanism's complicated. But there's aspects of the phenomena which is very adolescent even childlike. So, but you learn things, you know. But there is definitely a mechanism in poltergeist systems. There is slight mechanisms within the haunting phenomena, you know, because we have residual phenomena, we have interaction, intelligent phenomena. And it's all down to simply, does phenomena recognize you in the environment or interact with the environment? Mm. And if that's an answer yes, then it's intelligent, which about 79% of them are, you know, intelligent hauntings. The rest fall under residual, you know, like an old battlefield and seeing a soldier, a knight in a castle, a horse-drawn carriage because it was once their horse-drawn carriage. You know, those sort of things are residual. But that's something, I don't call that phenomena. I think that's something more of a natural, earthly rarity, but happens, which we can experience. But interaction's a whole different ballgame, you know, so... but they are long-lived sometimes, hundreds of years sometimes they can go on for.
It is, like I say, there's so many facets to it, I think, that the days of in the 70s of it being, you know, it's a haunting, and then you obviously get things like the Stone Tape Theory coming into play, Steve.
Yeah.
A lot of it based after Nigel Neal's show in the 70s. But that's kind of pulled away from people thinking it may be residual when you've just got that repeating thing that happens on occasions when the environment might be right, whatever it could be.
Yeah, you're right, and you're absolutely right, but it gets a bit tricky. Imagine you are walking through a stately home and you witness, assumably, an apparition which is looking at you in dress uniform for that period. So what did you witness? Well, was it a time slip? You know, you somehow got wrapped up in an incident which is overlaid from that time? Or is it residual, and what you were seeing was a play of events? But was she looking at you? Well, yeah. I mean, did she pay? You know, I mean, was she just looking in your direction, or how do you know she was actually seeing you? So, no, I could tell because she watched me walk across the room and this, that, and the other. So that's intelligent. That's interaction. So, well, that's not residual. And you can see how it gets very, very tricky now. Because like I said right at the beginning, you've got these people who have created the terminologies. Drop them. Get rid of them. You don't need hauntings, poltergeists, residual, intelligence. All you need is to get rid of all the boxes and say it for what it is. You know, this is what's happened. You know, we don't need... Because when you create these terminologies, you get these grey areas when you created them. Because you don't think at the time when you created the terminology... Oh, you got intelligence, right? And you've got residual, right? Okay, so what happens if you're in a period set building? What is it? It's like, well, it could be this, it could be that, or it could be something else. Well, your terminology's just all falling apart. So, you know, sometimes it's just best to just get out of the boxes, you know, and just write it down for what it is and investigate it that way.
Yeah.
Be honest.
Absolutely. Well, Steve, before I keep you here for another 15 hours, buddy, because I could... chat with you about these subjects all night, my friend.
It is fascinating, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
Obviously, coming up in May, you've got your Awakenings Minicon.
We do, yes. We're back. Awakenings Minicon is taking place at Old Smokies, which is a hotel and restaurant, and it's a function room there in Oldham, in Ashton Lane, and in Oldham in Manchester on May the 17th. And I have to say, you know, the tickets are going pretty fast, to be honest with you. You know, I don't know if there will be any available by May, to be honest with you, but they are seemingly being purchased quite quickly. So what's different about this event is I sat back and I've attended events all over the world. I've lectured at them or I've been invited to them, one thing or another. Is I've had my fair share. And maybe it's just me. I'm getting grumpy in my old age, you know. But they can be entertaining. But for me, it's about evidence. For me, I want to see something that impresses me, you know, or gets me mind going. What I don't want is an hour story. And it might be interesting, don't get me wrong. And it might even be true. But you will never know if you've not got evidence. For the first time, we wanted to bring an event together, this Minicon, with no old stuff being repeated. It's all new. It's all scientific and it's all evidence-based. It's about what we now know, new experiments that have happened, you know, new research, tools for being used to gather that data. And, you know, we've got photographic video footage, we've got all sorts of different things, but it's all about evidence, you know, because there's no stories, you know, because we can back up absolutely everything that's been said here. And not just my lectures, but numerous other people, specialists in these areas, in the paranormal, in the advanced UAP stuff, in the cryptid stuff as well, which we're also covering. It's about the new evidence. And that's what I wanted to do, because I wanted to bring an event where it's all new information. We are moving forward.
Yeah.
Because we can go to these same events every year, some places in the world, and it's the same thing that was on last year. And you've heard it, you've seen it, and you think, well, you know what? You didn't show me any video evidence, no photographic evidence, some interesting stories, and that's it. For me, it's not exciting enough for me anymore. You know, because you can easily go down the wrong path by just saying, taking on board what somebody said. I'm not saying that maybe that is true in many cases, but you run the risk of that.
Yes.
And for me, I've got to look for evidence, because I'm desperately trying to push forward about our research. Where are we going to be in 10 years? I might not even be around in 10 or 15 years. Who's going to do my job? There's no more new kids on the block now. They've all got PS5s in their hands. You know, that's the way of the world. Where are we a dying breed, Paul? Do you know what I mean? We could be.
I hope not.
We've got no younguns coming through, have we?
Thin on the ground for a bit more of a sort of academically challenging these kind of set ideas thing. I think you're quite right there, because we seem to be, you say, everybody's seen Ghost Adventures, and therefore that's how we do everything.
Is it? And it's not. It's entertainment.
Yes,
you know, I admit. You know, but you know, well, it's the whole point about putting this event together is about new data, new science, new evidence, pushing forward. People are going to be seeing things and hearing things and watching things that is going to blow their minds. And not only that, because it is pretty hefty stuff, is that it's going to challenge their thoughts, their opinions, in regarding where we truly are going and when we understand this phenomena, which direction is it taking us in? Quite perplexing, to be honest. And this is why I don't think any formal, literal disclosure is going to take place. Because I tell you what, they can't just drop this on the knee, on your lap. It's just, they've got a lot of work to do. And that first point is change the narrative, which they've done.
Yeah.
And they're getting there. At least they've laid the tarmac down for the road to get down that narrative, yes, you know.
Absolutely.
But yes, May the 17th, and if anybody wants to find out more about that, they can just go on to phenomenamagazine.co.uk or stevemerra.com or the Awakening Events Limited website. All the details are there about the event. You can purchase tickets there as well. It's a full one-day event. When I say full one day, I mean a full one day. I mean, you're talking sort of half nine start, half nine finish. You know, we really literally are jam-packing as much information in there as we possibly can. So people can find out details about that. And the magazine's on there as well, if people want to find out about that as well.
Lovely. Well, I'll put links to everything in the show notes when the episode drops for everybody, Steve. I'm hopefully going to be able to make it there myself. It's been a long time since I've been to Alden.
I look forward to seeing you.
So, go and catch up, because I've not spoken to Paul Sinclair for a while. And
yes, Paul's coming along, and he's going to be covering a case that he's not talked about. And you know what? There's been many times he didn't want to ever talk about this case because it is so perplexing.
Yeah.
Even I had raised eyebrows and thinking, oh, my God, Paul. I mean, and this is what the phenomena does. It delivers absurdity.
Yes.
It makes you think you're going crazy. But it is an absolutely incredible case, the Hummerby case.
It certainly is.
Which is going to be not only talking about it, but revealing new stuff, which is going to be fascinating. So, and people haven't really got even the teeth into this case yet.
No.
So they're going to be pretty blown away. And it's not your normal case, this. This is far from normal, anything normal, you know. So, yeah, and that's just one of them. So, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Paul is going to be there. Barry's going to be there by Fitzgerald.
Yeah.
And we have a special part of this event as well, which is it's off the record, it's called. We spent some time, myself, Barry, and Carmela, with other researchers. We went to Spain, a particular area in Spain which has been under investigation for many years. And we gathered all the data, we'd done all the checks, and we went there. And boy, was that quite an experience when it was the first time we discovered that something happened which is absolute evidential, and we're the first people to ever get it as well. The first time the phenomenon has presented itself like this in any way. So there's a special part of this event at the end of the evening, which is quite unique as well. So, and it's going to allow people to be able to come out on these certain investigations with us as project under Project Doorway, which is Barry's heading.
Yeah.
And it gives them the opportunity to be able to. Of course, we have to do some safeguarding. Health and safety comes into it because you just never know when it comes to this phenomena. But we will be giving people the opportunity to take part. So, yeah. So it should be an interesting day. We're looking forward to it.
Brilliant. Well, Steve, thank you so much for your time today. As I joked before we started, I've sat 6 years waiting to interview you and invite you onto the show, and then I don't want you to leave.
Always invite me back, Paul. Just get in touch and let me know.
Absolutely.
And we can always get into... I've touched on nothing really, to be honest with you. But we can always get in. I haven't really. We can always get into some of the stuff.
Absolutely.
So just keep in touch with me and we'll do it again.
Absolutely. I will hold you to that. Steve, thank you as always, my friend. You take care.
You're welcome. Thanks, Paul.
Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino.
like a social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.